Chapter 5. Anne's Interesting World. Early the next morning, Anne stood in front of Marilla, dressed neatly and clutching her book bag. "I'm going back to school," Anne announced to Marilla. "That is all there is left for me now that my friend has been ruthlessly torn from me. At least in school I can look at her and think about the happy past."
"You'd be better thinking about your lessons and sums," said Marilla, concealing her delight at this development. "Behave yourself and do just what your teacher tells you."
Anne was welcomed back to school with open arms by her friends. Her imagination had been sorely missed in games, her voice in singing, and her dramatic ability during reading time. The girls flooded her with gifts of food, flowers, and poems. She was even able to communicate with Diana, although only through long, sad letters in which they declared their undying friendship for each other. Marilla expected more mischief now that Anne was back at school, but was pleasantly surprised when none developed. Instead, Anne threw herself into her studies, determined not to be beaten in any class by her enemy, Gilbert Blythe. The rivalry between them was soon apparent, and Anne's dislike of him drove her to work harder than she ever imagined she was capable of. By the end of the term, Anne and Gilbert were both promoted into the fifth class. They now began studying Latin, geometry, French, and algebra. Anne found geometry the most challenging.
"It's perfectly awful stuff, Marilla," Anne complained one day after school. "I'm sure I'll never understand it, and there is no scope for imagination in it at all. Even Diana is better at geometry than me. Oh, how I miss spending time with her! But really, Marilla, one can't stay sad very long in such an interesting world, can one?"
Marilla agreed that one could not. Little did Anne know just how interesting things were about to become. In January, the premier came to the island to address his loyal supporters in nearby Charlottetown. Most Avonlea people were on the premier's side of politics and went to hear him speak. Marilla went along with the Lindys and left Anne and Matthew to keep house until her return the following day. The two were happy to have the cheerful kitchen at Green Gables all to themselves. A bright fire was burning in the stove as Matthew slept on the couch and Anne studied her lessons with fierce determination.
"Matthew, did you ever study geometry when you went to school?" asked Anne.
"Well, now, no, I didn't," replied Matthew, coming out of his sleep with a start.
"I wish you had," sighed Anne, "because then you'd be able to sympathize with me. It is putting a cloud over my whole life. I'm so bad at it, Matthew."
"Well, now, I don't know about that," said Matthew. "Mr. Phillips told me last week in Blair's store at Carmody that you were the smartest student in school and were making rapid progress."
Not a minute later, the kitchen door was pushed open and in rushed Diana Barry.
"Whatever is the matter, Diana?" cried Anne. "Has your mother given up trying to keep us apart at last?"
"Oh, Anne, do come quickly," begged Diana. "My sister Minnie May is awfully sick. She's got croup. Father and mother are away in town, and there's nobody to go for the doctor. Minnie May is awfully bad, and our servant, Mary Jo, doesn't know what to do. And, oh, Anne, I'm so scared."
Matthew grabbed his cap and coat and rushed out into the dark night. "I'll get the horse ready and go to Carmody for the doctor," he said tensely.
"Don't cry, Di," said Anne with cheer in her voice. "I know exactly what to do for croup. You forget that Mrs. Hammond had twins 3 times, and they all had croup regularly. Just wait until I get the Ipecac bottle. You might not have any at your house. Come now."
The two girls ran hand in hand along the lane and across the snowy field to Orchard Slope. When they arrived at Diana's house, Anne saw that little Minnie May was indeed very sick. The restless child lay on the couch sweating, while her difficult breathing could be heard all over the house.
"Minnie May has croup, all right. She's pretty bad, but I've seen worse. We must have lots of hot water in the pot. Mary Jo, put some wood in the stove," Anne instructed.
Now, I'll take Minnie Mae's clothes off and put her to bed. You try to find some soft cotton cloths, Diana. I'm going to give her a dose of Ipecac, first of all, to help her fight this. Down that Ipecac went, not only once, but many times during the long, anxious night. The two girls worked patiently over the suffering Minnie Mae, and Mary Jo, anxious to do all she could, kept up a strong fire and made more than enough hot water. It was 3 o'clock in the morning by the time Matthew arrived with a doctor, for he had had to go all the way to Spencervale for one. Fortunately, the worst of it was over, and Minnie Mae was much better, sleeping quietly in her bed. "I almost gave up in despair," explained Anne to the doctor. "She got worse and worse. I gave her every drop of Ipecac in that bottle, and when the last dose went down, I said to myself, 'This is our last hope.' But in about 3 minutes, she coughed up the phlegm and began to get better right away. I was so relieved."
"I see," nodded the doctor, astonished at Anne's capable handling of the situation. "I'll take care of it from here."
Later, he was to tell the Barrys, "Without that girl's dedicated efforts, Minnie Mae surely would have passed away. It was lucky that this intelligent and sensible little girl was here." Anne and Matthew took the short journey home as the doctor was seeing to Minnie Mae. Although exhausted, Anne took in the beauty of the white winter morning at dawn. "Oh, Matthew, isn't it a wonderful morning? And I'm so glad Mrs. Hammond had 3 pairs of twins after all. If she hadn't, I mightn't have known what to do for Minnie Mae. But, oh, Matthew, I'm so sleepy. I don't think I can go to school. I just know I wouldn't be able to keep my eyes open, and I'd be so stupid." "You just go right to bed and have a good sleep, and I'll do all the chores. Don't you worry your little red head about a thing," replied Matthew, patting her shoulder. Anne went to bed and didn't wake up until the afternoon. She went down to the kitchen where Marilla was sitting sewing. "Oh, did you see the premiere?" asked Anne at once. "What did he look like, Marilla?"
"Well, he never got to be premiere on account of his looks," said Marilla. "Such a nose as that man had. But he can speak, and he did have some interesting ideas. Your dinner is in the oven, Anne. I guess you're famished after all that you've been through."
"Matthew has been telling me about last night, and I must say it was fortunate you knew what to do. I wouldn't have had any idea myself." Not until Anne had finished her dinner did Marilla say what she had been waiting to say. "Mrs. Barry was here this afternoon, Anne. She wanted to see you, but I wouldn't wake you up. She says you saved Minnie Mae's life, and she is very sorry she acted as she did in that affair of the currant wine. She says she knows now you didn't mean to get Diana drunk, and she hopes you'll forgive her. You're to go over this evening if you like, for Diana can't leave the house because of a bad cold she caught last night." Anne immediately ran over to Orchard Slope to see Diana and came home some hours later in the winter twilight, dancing across the snowy field. "You see before you a perfectly happy person, Marilla," she announced upon her return. "I'm perfectly happy. Yes, in spite of my red hair. Mrs. Barry kissed me and cried and said she was so sorry and she could never repay me. I felt so embarrassed, Marilla. And Diana and I had the most wonderful afternoon playing together, catching up on all that lost time. Oh, how I missed my kindred spirit and how good it feels to be reunited," Anne said dramatically. Marilla smiled warmly and couldn't help but share in Anne's happiness.